Hello and welcome to the N17 podcast. My name's Cosmo, and tonight I'm joined by Eddie.
Yeah, hey, hey.
What is that? Yeah, hey. So that's a new one.
Man's acting like he got caught off guard.
I literally flew in about 4 hours ago.
Got back today.
Yeah.
And he's on to record a podcast. Absolutely love that.
We're just talking about his commitment as well.
I know. Eddie, tell the listeners where you were and how keen you were to watch Ange Ball.
Yeah, man. For the past week, I've been in Malta, just obviously chopping it up on the beach, innit? And Ange Ball has charmed me so much. I've been desperately watching on like my phone on like a sun lounger. Because they're an hour ahead as well, so I'm not watching it at some unsociable hours. Like everyone's out dinner, and I'm just on the sunbed on the roof, being like, pass the ball, bruv.
what were the streams saying? Were you on like some really dodgy?
Terrible. I swear, I was fighting for my life. Just
pop up every 2 minutes.
Trust me, just to catch a glimpse of Pidgeotto. Trying to score a goal for us. So
the crucial question, would you have done that under Conte?
Oh, I was going to say.
Bruv. I was struggling to watch Conte at home. You would not, bruv. There is no way.
I remember one of our conversations where I was like, I'm just going to pick up new hobbies so I don't have to watch it. I was going to like art galleries and stuff over watching Spurs. That's how bad it got. Haven't introduced him, but we've got Jed here. Again, someone you can't question the commitment. He's rushed in to get here on time. So we appreciate that, Jed.
I'm rushed in, but you can definitely question my commitment, seeing as I haven't actually seen both the games this week. And I've been at home, so...
But like I was saying, it's all about the vibes right now. It's not about the tactical analysis. It's just about enjoying.
I was at Orient on Saturday, though. I was at Orient on Saturday, so I have an excuse for that. But... Yeah,
but the link between Spurs and Orient is kind of severed a little bit now. You see, Kane's pulled his sponsorship.
We'll probably talk about him in this podcast, but after that, I don't want to chat about him ever again.
Yeah. I said, I was like in the WhatsApp chat. I was like, oh, we need to talk about Kane, and Jed's like, what? Why are we talking about that guy? But you know, skipping ahead a little bit, I do want to talk about whether losing Kane has potentially been a positive. Who knows? We'll get onto that though. But the game against Burnley, Eddie, I'll probably lean on you quite heavily here because, you know, Jed hasn't seen the whole game, but we just pretty much blew them away. Although we did show some real stones, I guess, to weather going 1-0 down as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought it was interesting. Personally, when they obviously scored that first goal, it was the exact type of goal that you saw us conceding, like especially with the system that we're playing, just so exposed to pacing behind. Even though we've got two very quick centre backs, obviously it's a dangerous system to play. And it is a system that can be got at. And we saw its frailties against Brentford. We saw chances conceded at United. Also Fulham, which I'm sure we'll talk about. And Bournemouth. So we're going to give chances like this away. But I think the initial resilience to bounce back pretty much straight away. And then the confidence to continue to play the way that we want to and to show our true quality is another indication of like the just systemic change that Ange is instilling at the club. Because those are the types of games where we would have definitely like been fighting for 80 minutes just to go 2-1 up. In like the Conte era, or even the Mourinho era, or we would fall away in those eras as well. So I thought it was really, really, like I just said, like just a great indication of the mentality change that's going on at the club, and the persistence to continue to score goals, to be on the front foot, to play the way that we want to play forward-thinking football. And then we can obviously go into the tactics a bit more later. But just initially, based on what you're saying, you know, it's like more positive signs for me about the direction that we're heading in.
Jed, are you surprised at how quickly these players have like seemingly taken to Ange Ball?
Yeah, definitely, because I feel like it's a lot of those players have been there for the past, well, in some players' cases, they've been there for the last 3 or 4 years and playing a certain brand of football, which is just the complete opposite scale to what we are now. And of course, I was very hot on Ange before we got him, but I didn't really watch a lot of Celtic. I watched him here and there, but just from what I heard the style of football he was going to bring would obviously be positive. But everyone was obviously saying that you're going to go through a tough time at the beginning. So I think a lot of us just sort of we didn't want to expect too much at the beginning, but the way we've come out of the traps is it's kind of, I don't know, I just really wasn't expecting it. And the way some of these players who in the past couple of years have just been pretty much terrible for, well, not even terrible, Basuma didn't really get given a chance. Sarr was basically banished and never to be seen again after his game at the San Siro. And I think part of it maybe is because we've basically got 4 new starters in the starting lineup as well. And I think maybe that does help, or maybe it doesn't. So we're not leaning on players who have been playing that sort of style of football over the last 3-4 years. So maybe that's how to adjust. But again, like pre-season was quite heavily disrupted. Obviously we only had 2-3 games, so they probably got a bit more time to sort of work on just the system rather than, I know you don't really prepare for games in pre-season. You just want to set the foundations for how you're going to play throughout the season. But I do think maybe the little bit of extra time just to sort of work on the system in pre-seasons helps slightly. I don't know. Maybe that's not even a factor at all, but yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the things that I would say like about it and the players like taking to Ange is one, I think, not to take any credit away from Ange, but I think he's probably surprised at how good a lot of these players actually are. I think we are. I don't think we expected the likes of Adoghi to settle in so quickly. Same with Van de Ven as well. Like, I remember when he came in, we were saying, oh, he's not going to play against Brentford. He's going to need a bit of time to settle. And somehow, like, we've just managed to throw these guys in and they're just, like, straight away looking like absolute, like, quality acquisitions. And yeah, but I think that definitely helps. I think he has lanced a lot of the squad as well. I think that can't be underestimated at all. And that is all on him. The fact is, and he's kind of hinted at this in some of his like press conferences and stuff, like he said he went in there and he saw that something needed to change. And you see the players that have kind of fallen away. The likes of Dyer is completely banished. Højbjerg playing a very like reserve role now. Lloris, he's still at the club, but he's essentially like banned, which is a little bit, I don't know how I feel about that. I feel it's a little bit on him as well. Like, I feel like he should have accepted some of those moves that have come in for him. And then also, no one wanted to lose Kane, but I do think that's also helped in giving us like a new start. And I think it has set the foundations correctly to like really have a new era under him. And I think that's one of the reasons why they've taken to him so quickly, to be honest.
Yeah, I think, well, like you said, there are new players like Adoghi, Van de Ven, Solomon, for instance, on the weekend, that have obviously never played in the Spurs side. But if you look at the renewed life in players like Basuma, the confidence and the ability to give people like Sarr the platform to kickstart their Spurs career, the ability to give Porro a position that he can flourish in. Vicario as well, of course. That's a lot of new blood in the team, essentially. Madison as well, of course. And for that kind of, for that many new players to play a completely new system and for it to be so cohesive at this point is genuinely quite surprising. I think if you look at, we can take United as an example. Ten Hag has worked with that squad for, 18 months now? At least 12 plus months. And there isn't any discernible style or tenacity about that team. Poch has had a bit less time, obviously, with the Chelsea team. But there's a similar amount of new players in that Chelsea team. And it does not look cohesive at all. And there are few teams in the Premier League that have had this amount of change and are able to see the results of that change as quickly as we have. And it makes it hard to temper expectations a little bit. And I'm sure that the first kind of real blowback we get will be like a kind of like bring our feet to the ground moment for us. But at the moment, and we could possibly say that Fulham was that feeling a little bit, with just the indication that we're still at the start, like Postecoglou's been saying, like Andrew's been saying, and he said it again on the weekend, that it is the start of this new era. And it's not all going to be fixed in a single window. But then you look at the team and you think, well, that's like more than halfway. That's not even just that. It doesn't feel like the start. It feels like we're underway onto something very exciting, and it makes it hard to temper expectations, but we need to. But at the same time, like, I'm just so excited by some of the football that we're playing. And if we were to go into the game, like, there are so many standouts.
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, it is hard to temper expectations, because when you were mentioning like the managers there and you were talking about like how Pochettino is just basically flailing to try and get something to work at Chelsea. And then Ten Hag, he's a highly rated manager, but after 12 plus months in charge, like, there's no discernible identity. I did get like a rush of excitement, just be like, have we just randomly found a 58-year-old manager who's just like an absolute gem that no one in world football knew? And we've given him the chance and he's stumbled upon something that's going to be, I don't know where it could lead, but it's hard to keep our feet on the ground, I think, because the football is just so good and so effective at the moment. I still don't think we've really clicked, because I think assuming Sonny remains up front, until he starts really banging in goals, we've just shared our goals around, and maybe that will continue. But I think if we do either stumble upon Sonny being like the proper striker, or we bring someone in January, or maybe Brennan Johnson hits the ground running and he's scoring goals, I think that's when we can be like, okay, this is a serious team. But yeah.
I do think, just to touch on the striker situation, I know a lot of people were obviously quite upset about the fact we let Kane go and seemingly didn't bring in any sort of replacement whatsoever. But I'm starting to sort of think now that the kind of profiles that we have for that striker role at the moment, kind of perfect for us. I think there's going to be some games like the Burnley game that suits Son, where I think company's being a bit naive in thinking that sort of performance that they were putting in the Championship is going to scale up to the Premier League. Look, I'm not going to be that sort of guy who tells a team from the Championship to come up and basically what Neville was saying about us against United. I'm not going to call them arrogant, but I do think unless you have that certain level of quality in your squad, it will be hard to scale up. So That being said, with the way that Burnley were playing that high line in the first half, and even in parts of the second half as well, I did hear that they went to a five at the back in the end. But someone like having Son up top for some those sort of games just gives us a different option. I know Ange does like to keep the passing short, and he's very clear in how he wants us to play. But sorry, a couple of times Porro got in those positions, and because they had that high line, we have that pace of Son in behind. And I think there's going to be games like that this season because a lot more teams now are starting to play with higher lines. There's not many teams in the league like you would get 5-6 years ago who are just going to sit deep and try counter. And then the alternative to that, when we do play teams like that, you've got someone like Richarlison who I think can be a bit of a nuisance, can put himself about a bit more if there is going to be a game against a deep block team. I think he'll probably suit that sort of scenario as well. So I think just in terms of that striker situation, I think we've definitely got enough to get by until January now. I just think that the early start that we've got off to this season just going to breed even more confidence into the players now. Like Andrew's always said, like it might be tough at the start, but as soon as the players sort of start to see some results coming from it, and not even just results, the level of performance that we're putting in as well is genuinely incredible for the stage we're at. We're 4 games in and we're kind of blowing teams away already. I'm delighted with the start, man. And obviously being heavily Ange in from kind of even February, March time, we were talking about it yesterday, but I just couldn't be any happier, man.
Yeah, you were right all along, Jed. You were right all along.
I don't even want to say I was right because I don't want to do the whole I was right thing. But like I said to you guys yesterday, the football with Ange was always a bonus for me. And like I said, I didn't see much of the Ange football. I'd heard a lot of things. It was just the character, man. The man, all the interviews I watched of him, I was just drawn to him straight away. And that was the sole reason that I wanted us to have that. Because we've been so beaten down over the last 3-4 years by these managers who hated us, that I just wanted someone who I felt like I could probably get behind. And obviously now the football he's bringing is, well, it's the best football we've seen in years. So it's a bonus.
And I do think like the perceptions of the football is very important as well. So I don't know if you guys saw the Brennan Johnson like announcement on Instagram when he was at the club shop, but he was saying how excited he was to play with like. And he seemed really genuine. He was like, oh, I can't wait to play with like the likes of Bissouma, Maddison. And then like he said Sonny as well. But I just thought it was quite interesting in the fact that I do think Son is kind of like our designated star now at the moment. But I do think it's interesting that players that are, you know, transfer targets / people who've joined the club, they're like watching us. And they're like, that's a team I want to play for. Like, I really like that. I'm really excited about it. I wasn't excited about the Johnson transfer initially, but I've actually become very, very excited about it because I think Ange speaks so positively about it. He seems so keen and hungry and motivated. I'm very excited to put him into that mix.
I think the really interesting thing about the Johnson transfer is that if you look at, and I think we can even link it back into the Burnley game. If you look at the profile of what Johnson brings, like in terms of that ability to get in behind and really terrify defenders with that pace and that kind of that attack that attacking position and being able to get us up the pitch, it is like if he is going to be playing on the right, it's very different to what Kulusevski brings. And I think the important thing about what we're doing now that we just failed to do under both Mourinho and Conte was to build a squad of different profiles. Because with Conte, we nearly destroyed our squad because it was just full of centre midfielders who couldn't pass and wing backs. We didn't really have any wingers. We had like a couple of inside forwards in Sonny and Deki. And obviously we had Kane. And for the last 4 or 5 seasons, it's literally been Kane and Inshallah. Like, and that was our attack tactical setup. And obviously, we just had like centre backs that weren't that were asked to perform under pressure, but really could only perform on the front foot. If you looked at some of the best seasons that, or even the best games or periods that Davinson Sanchez had as a Spurs player, it was always in a front foot side. It was that initial season under Poch where he shone the most, and we were very much on the front foot. And he had the, and he was able to show that he had the recovery pace to make those really, really, like, what I remember Sanchez, like, in positive sense, is those like recovery challenges when he's been he tracks back 40, 50 yards and times a really, really good tackle. And that's what we're seeing somewhat with the likes of like Van de Ven, where his recovery is so quick and effective that we're able to even build from his tackles when he picks up the ball. And like for the last few years, we've really struggled to build a squad of the right profiles. That's why we have players like Sessegnon still on the books. I couldn't believe that Sessegnon was at the club by the end of the transfer window, because the only position you can conceivably play in this formation is like a left winger, where Solomon was playing on the weekend, or Sonny was when Richarlison's playing. And I'm sorry, Sess can't beat his man at the best of times, let alone be a winger that can hold that width and provide the quality. So I don't know where he's going to go. And the signing of someone like Brennan Johnson is so clearly built behind both what Ange desires that winger profile to be, and also you get the sense that it isn't just about, because I know, like, me included, we were desperate for someone like, I don't know, like a Williams or something like that, someone that we knew was a known quantity, kind of, even like with the Ansu Fati deal as well, something that we were just like, cool, like, we've seen him play, we know what like the qualities are, and it's just like, if Ange can get the best out of those players. But it was clear, A, that Ange didn't want for Fati at the, like, when it came to the, when it came to right at the end. I think the reason why it didn't go through isn't because we don't have Brighton's pool, even though that's what I was saying at the time. I definitely think it was a case of like Ange being like, if it's one or the other, I want Johnson hands down over Fati. I don't want to dry loan, hate that term.
I don't know where the hell that came from.
Yeah, for a player that if he turns out good, we just give him in back to the club that he wants to actually play for. Or B, he turns out to not be good and we've not pulled the trigger on someone like Johnson who Ange actually wanted. So I think that that's again like a more like a positive step, and maybe not getting some other players will bite us if we do suffer some injuries. But the fact that we're getting behind Ange and get like even selling the likes of Davinson Sanchez and putting the trust in players like Phillips and Dorrington, if Dorrington is like considered a backup at this point, we know Phillips definitely has that path to the first team. And like Ange saying, part of the reason why we didn't go big on the striker when Kane left is because he knew that we had the profiles of Son, Richarlison, Vélez at the club already, is positive, because you get the sense that, okay, these are footballing decisions, not financial decisions, not marketing decisions, and not about getting the most out of the money that we're able to spend, and more about how can we equip Ange to play the football that he wants to play.
Yeah, I actually admire his decision to get rid of Sanchez so much. I'm not one of the people that like really like criticize Sanchez. I actually think he would have been, up until that Fulham game, I thought he would be decent as like a third choice centre back. But I think it just says so much about Ange's belief in himself and in his system that he's like, if one of these guys gets injured, I'm just going to promote a youth player. I don't think Dyer is going to be the third or fourth choice. I think it really is just like Phillips and Dorrington now. And like, it's a bit scary because these guys have literally neither of them has played a Premier League game, and they're both our backups. But in terms of committing to a philosophy and a belief, like, it's kind of incredible. And I think it goes to show the kind of the buy-in Ange has from us now, and the belief we have in him as well, because I don't think under any other manager we would kind of be like actually sort of excited about that. I think under Poch you might kind of like accept it, but I don't think we would be like, oh, this is a good move, like this is actually quite exciting. There was something that you were saying earlier, like when you're talking about the pace of Johnson, and I think you mentioned Sanchez as well, which I find, I can't remember if you said that when someone made a tackle, I think it was Sanchez making a tackle. It's just like a little thing I've noticed, but you know when Romero used to do those reckless tackles back in the day, like under Conte, and everyone would kind of be like, oh, Jesus, like, why has he done that kind of thing? Even they now seem to have a kind of like tactical effect, because they almost like shake up the game, and it kind of like breaks this team's like attack. And because we have so many quick players, so many fit players, we can actually like pounce on that loose ball. And I think quite often we go on a counter attack from one of those mad tackles. And that's another thing that, you know, like before we saw that almost as like a useless trait. It was just Romero being angry. But even that has become a positive. The job he's done, like, you can't underestimate like how good it is. I think another thing that I wanted to say is like the general vibe around being a Spurs fan now, like, I think the whole fan base is so happy. Like, I've somehow picked up a bit of a habit of talking to the old boys at the gym, basically every single time I go. And it's mainly about Spurs. And like, they are so positive about it. And they've lived through a lot of Spurs teams, and they absolutely love him as well. And I do think like among the kind of like the hardcore, the guys that went to a lot of games, a lot of them, and I do think there is something in the Spurs culture of kind of being wise after the fact and kind of being like, oh yeah, no, I always hated Conte kind of thing. But a lot of them, I don't think were that positive about Conte the whole time. And I think secretly they did kind of crave returning to attacking football, because that is the foundation of the club. That is basically what we're meant to be about. But yeah, just like a general thing, like, I just think everyone's so positive about Spurs. I was wearing my Spurs shirt on the way back from the gym the other day, and like some woman just like out of the window just shouted like, "Oh, when you Spurs!" I think it was on the day that we actually won the game. Yeah, it's just a good feeling around the club at the moment. It's the polar opposite of what it was last season.
Yeah,
well, that's the thing, isn't it? We're not suffering. We're not being made to suffer. We're not being told that suffering is like some higher art. Do you know what I mean? The manager doesn't. The manager, when he came in, said that the fans are going to tell us, are going to be the indication of what we're doing is correct or working or not. And if we turn up to these games and the team are weak, mentally not strong, and the football is poor, then you can be like, okay, this is maybe a rough start, and we don't have the players suited to play Ange's football yet. But the fact that like there is such an evident change in like the mentality of the club, I guarantee you any Spurs fan at this point will happily take a loss to any team as long as the performance is positive this season. It will be disappointing, but the change is so deeply rooted in how the club operates that you're going to find that the buy-in is almost instant, because what Ange is asking of the fans is to be patient, but also to be honest about their feelings about the club and about the play. And that feedback loop is so different from Conte and Mourinho being like, well, this, as long as this club listens to me and as long as this club bends its back for me, then I'll be able to give the club what they want. And that feedback loop just breeds kind of an expectancy that we're going to perform because of these managers, without necessarily there being any evidence to suggest that they can transform the club or the team or the players. Because we just saw such a severe lack of coaching from both of those managers. And if you're going to change a club, if you're going to change players, if you're going to change a brand of football, you have to coach it. You can't just expect it to happen because that's the way that you play.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I agree. Yeah, Jed, did you want to add anything on that?
No, I think Eddie's spot on with that, to be honest. Nothing more to add, really.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I wanted to talk about as well is Sonny as captain. We were having that discussion about the fact that he's kind of surprised us in his kind of leadership and how well he's kind of like grown into the role. I think because it kind of goes against the kind of the stereotype of like what we normally see as captain, where it's someone that is really, I guess, like quite aggressive and like riles up their own players kind of thing. And that's kind of what a captain is always seen as in England. Whereas like Sonny, I do feel like he has this like quite empathetic leadership, which comes across really well. And I do think part of that is Sonny and part of that is Ange as well, because he has really made it a committee by adding Madison and Romero as those vice captains. And it does seem like they're really sharing out that responsibility. Because, yeah, we saw the behind the scenes clip when he was like, it's up to you guys how you like regulate that dressing room. I think that is something that has definitely helped the vibe of the squad as well. And in addition to that, I think I didn't really want to say it at the time, but like when Sonny did like his first few interviews as captain, like before the Brentford game, I did think you could tell he was a bit nervous. But I think he has really grown into it, and him getting a hat-trick as well. By the way, the first goal, we scored so many good goals in that game, but I keep thinking about that chip from Son. Like, it really is a goal that every single time you watch it, it looks better. Exquisite skill to be able to do that.
Yeah, Son has this habit of, like, when he finishes, he sometimes, it looks like he's closed the angle down for himself. And with some of Son's finishing times, like, listen, he's scored over 100 goals for us now. But sometimes I feel he never laces it, innit? Even like that third goal he scored, and he scores so many of these goals where he side foots it near post. And it's like, you haven't even put enough power on that, but he seems to find the corners so well. But yeah, I think we spoke about on the pod before that the captain selections and the vice captain selections were a masterstroke to manage, because it really did signal a new era. Obviously Son gets on with pretty much everyone, seemingly anyway, gets on with everyone in the dressing room. Then I suppose you've got Romero, who's sort of, I think we have quite a, we almost have a core of like Spanish speaking players in the squad as well. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's quite important on that side as well, that like he can sort of, I don't know. Listen, again, maybe, maybe it doesn't mean anything, but I feel like there could be something in that. And then again, with Madison, I think game by game now, you can just see he's really taking that responsibility on his shoulders now. And he's thriving. He's really, really thriving. And that's something I thought, listen, I never questioned his character in terms of a footballer. I think you can always see that he's been very confident in himself and willing to take that pressure on. But when you step up to a big club from, I mean, Leicester, obviously they've won the league, but they got relegated. I think sometimes it would be easy to sort of hide. And Madison hasn't done that at all. He's really taken everything into his stride. And yeah, I think it's just, and I know you put it on the running order, Cosmo, but the fact that someone like Kane isn't there anymore. And I think even Nuno mentioned the fact that when Spurs played without Kane, we almost played better as a team. And we have seen that anyway, but they're not looking for Kane. No one's, the first thought isn't get it to Kane. And I was never really a big fan of Kane as a captain or a leader in the first place anyway. So I think,
yeah, I just got a flashback to us watching the Amazon All or Nothing documentary. We were just all in hushed tones, like, because I think that was in prime lockdown, and like we were just doing this on Zoom.
There's no confidence.
And we were like, he's not actually that good as a captain, is he? Like, yeah.
You can't say fucking Christmas as a team talk. I'm sorry.
I completely forgot about that. Oh,
fucking
my
Christmas,
God.
Fucking chances, fucking goals. I mean, come on, man. So, yeah, listen, it's been said, and I just think I think it's really helped us move away from essentially the Kane era, because the last 3-4 years is basically what that has felt like. It has felt like the Harry Kane team, as Pep Guardiola said, which when he said it at the time, we weren't really, but it was basically all about Kane the last 3-4 years. Everything we did was catering for him, all the manager appointments. And listen, teams can get better. Teams can get better when their star player moves on. We've seen it happen before. And the fact that we just have a manager that wants to play good football, I think that's the main thing. The fact that we've got a manager that wants to play football is the main thing. Just because Kane left, it didn't mean we were going to automatically become a bad team. We have good players there still, and we just needed someone to get the best out of them.
Whether we're better or worse without Kane, I'm not sure, but we definitely wouldn't be playing the style of football that we are playing at the moment, because I think so many of the chances are literally being created by people passing it around the 18-yard box. And I'm always thinking in my head, I'm like, oh, someone just shoot. But it does eventually like lead to a chance. There's just no way you could do that with a Harry Kane on the pitch, because he would be taking a shot as soon as he had a bit of a tiny bit of space. The counterpoint to that is I think he still would score a lot of goals in this team, but I just think it would just look completely different. And I feel better that he's moved on, to be honest.
Yeah.
Maybe in 6 months I won't be saying that, but I do. I think it really was time for a fresh start.
We said even before you went, there's going to be a period where Kane is not at the club anymore, and we'll edging closer and closer to that. Whether it's going to be a contract issue or a playing issue or whatever, age issue, like there was going to be a time where we're going to have to plan without Kane. And it maybe happened kind of a bit sooner than we expected, but it not necessarily like hinders this transition, because it just gives us the opportunity to completely streamline that kind of transition to a team that plays a brand of football, regardless of who's in that team. And we're seeing that in the under-21s, we're seeing that in the first team. It's all about trying to play this new brand of football. And although Kane's a quality player, I think we'd have struggled to completely change our footballing identity if he was still at the club.
Yeah, I agree. The Zoom's about to run out, so let's go to a quick break and then come back to part two. Hello, welcome back to part two. We were just chatting off there a little bit there. We were saying about like the game and some of the goals and how it almost like turned into a competition for like the best goal that could be scored like on that day. Like Madison's goal was insane. Romero's goal was insane. I mean, the first three especially, and then the build up play for the fifth was amazing as well. Eddie, you said it was interesting the fact that Son was in there ahead of Richarlison. Some people were saying that was because of a knock to Richarlison, but For me, I feel like, and I hope actually, that that's going to be what we're going to go with going forward, Sonny up front. But, you know, I do think Ange will change it game to game. When it clicks like that, I don't really want to see it changed.
Well, it's similar to the situation with Emerson and Porro, in the sense that, like, Emerson didn't do anything particularly wrong in that first game against Brentford to warrant not starting the next games, but you can see the amount of quality that we gain on the ball with Porro in there compared to Emerson. And likewise, I think Richarlison's been doing a lot of what Ange wants from him in terms of build-up play and pressing, which are the two things that you can never say that Richarlison doesn't offer us. But I think, again, you see like the level of quality when Son goes up top that has been severely lacking in some of our attacking moves. And I think that's partly like for a couple of reasons. One of the reasons is that Son is one of the most clinical players in Europe. And we saw that in some of his best scoring seasons. He's consistently outperformed his XG in terms of expected goals compared to the chances that he gets or shots that he has. So he's insanely clinical. For someone that we sometimes be like, how did you not score? Or why are you trying to shoot from there? Sometimes he is a bit frustrating in that regard. But out of the five shots that he had, three of them were goals on the weekend. So he is just an incredibly clinical player. And like you said, Cosmo, you banged this drum for quite a long time now, how you felt that Sonny through the middle is arguably like his most effective position. But I think we've even seen an evolution of that, because I think that with the way we played, the other interesting thing is that Solomon very much is a profile of what an Ange winger is. He's someone that takes on their man, can go inside or outside, and can put the ball into the box or can cut in and shoot. And I think if you had that profile of player and they're effective, then it's hard to resist. Like in terms of defensively, if your winger can go either way, it's you have to be on top form just in terms of concentration to stop that from happening. And we saw with their link up for Son's first and second goals that if that clicks, we're going to create so many chances. And I think what Son offered us that Richarlison hasn't is I think that Son's making in way more intelligent runs than Richarlison has been. And I think that the issue that Richarlison's been having is that he's had no issue dropping in and linking up play and winning headers, winning fouls. He's never going to have an issue with that. And he will always run. Like he'll always press the centre-backs, press the goalkeeper. So you always get that from Richarlison. But it is quite incredible just how often Richarlison is in the wrong place when we're breaking or when the ball gets put into the box. Whether that's being at the near post when he should be at the far post, not being within the six-yard box when the ball flashes across goal, being on the edge of the box when he should be inside the box. As a number nine, it's quite surprising, like the amount of times you're just thinking, where is Richarlison? When the quality of the ball was actually good. Because sometimes the quality of the ball hasn't been good in last season and at the beginning of this season, although we have seen an improvement of that. I think the inclusion of players like Maddison and like the flashes of quality whenever Perisic comes on. Like when you see those balls go into the box, you expect a striker to be there and putting those away. And I think that's been the difference. Like Son makes really intelligent runs when he's playing through the middle. And the timing of those runs are superb. And we saw that with even the third goal. Like obviously the weight of pass is incredible from Porro. But the timing of that run between the two centre-backs or between the centre-back and the full-back, that has to be perfect because it's so easy to be offside in those situations. And I think that, personally, Richarlison, I don't even think he makes that run. And I don't think he finishes it either. And he doesn't finish Son's first goal because we saw that he missed an opportunity very similar in the Fulham game, where he was literally in front of goal and couldn't sort his feet out. And I don't want to bag on Richarlison. It is going to be partly a confidence issue. And I think that maybe there is some credence to the notion that there was a knock because he scored in the Fulham game, which makes you think if he scored in that game, it might breed confidence. Like you might want to play him in the next game. But I do think it was more of a tactical change just because I think, like you said, Burnley are going to want to play that high line. And I think the intelligence of Son's runs and the inclusion of like players like Porro in the midfield and when he's inverting and Madison, we have the quality to exploit those spaces. So I thought it was, if that's a permanent change, then it'll be interesting to see where like Brennan Johnson fits into all of this, because I think Kulusevski has been slowly getting back to his best, not absolutely perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but a lot more effective and doing the things that we know he's good at, which is carrying the ball, which is being strong in the transition. And if Brennan Johnson's favourite position is on the right, then it'll be interesting to see what happens. I do think that Ange does favour fluidity in that three, though. So I wouldn't necessarily think that like starting with all three of them will be an issue. Like I think that could very well be something that does happen. And we just see that fluidity between Son going up, between Brennan Johnson going up, between Kulusevski going up top. But like, yeah, I think for once in a long time, especially if like when Hill comes back and he's fit, we do have a lot of options to tinker around there. And we do actually have wingers in Solomon and Hill and Perisic. We do have clinical strikers in terms of Son. And we don't know. I mean, Velez is an unknown quantity at this point, but he could be exciting. And then we've just got someone like Brennan Johnson is also really exciting. So I think it's like it's a positive thing that we move Son to centre forward and he got a hat trick. It just proves that we do have quality in the team and they are versatile on that aspect.
Yeah, I do think on Richarlison, you did mention him scoring against Fulham, but I think apart from scoring, he was so bad in that game. He was really bad. And I'm the same. I don't really want to like rag on him too much, but I almost have like the opposite concern that I did about Son, where I used to say, like, I think Sonny's a striker rather than a wide player. I do think like, even though Richarlison had success playing down the middle at Everton, he was like his whole career playing like on the wing. And I think just because you've done a decent job keeping a pretty crap team up, it doesn't necessarily translate to being a striker for a team like Tottenham. I'm willing to give him chances. I actually do like really like the guy and do kind of root for him. But I am at a point where I'm quite concerned about him in terms of a weakness within the team, to be honest.
I think for me, the frustrating thing with Richarlison is, and it's been mentioned a lot now, it is clearly a confidence thing with him. And I think when he was at Everton, I think he really thrived being the main man. I think he kind of takes that on his shoulders and he feels the energy from the crowd. But I think he can tell that fans are probably getting a little bit frustrated. He's obviously frustrated with his own performances. But I can't. And listen, don't get me wrong, it is tough, but I just can't see it. 50, 60 minutes, his head's already dropping and yeah, he's already frustrated. And it's like, as soon you can see it as well. You can see when it's turned, you can see that he's not able to get himself out of that. And like, you just need to try as hard as you can to sort of just get through that, because there's going to be chances from this season. It's either him or Son up front. He can't just go the whole season just sort of moping around feeling sorry for himself. He needs to just try and put that aside. And I know that that's down to your character and who you are. And maybe you can't deal with those sort of things, but we need him. Essentially, we need him because, like I said earlier, Son isn't the ideal striker for every scenario. I actually think Richarlison's probably, while not perfect, I think he's better as a link man than Son is, because I think he's better with his back to goal. So we're going to need him for scenarios like that. He just needs to sort of, and we said against Fulham one goal, not against Fulham, just all season, that one goal and hopefully he gets his confidence back. I didn't watch the Fulham game, but judging from what you lot were saying in the group chat, it's probably his worst game all season. And even after he scored the goal, he didn't really seem to look up to much anyway. So I think it's going to be, might even be even harder for him now seeing Son score a hat trick and then he came on again. I think, did he come on late in the game?
Again, he didn't really do anything when he came on.
But he just needs to, he really needs to try and not let things affect him, because he's ultimately playing himself into this form at the moment, because he's allowing himself to get worked up over every little thing, especially in that Bournemouth game. You saw the moment where he basically trod over the ball and made a rash tackle. And then there was a moment 2 minutes after that where we broke and we had an advantage over Bournemouth, and he just played a pass into a player. So he needs to sort of just try not let things affect him, because we are going to have to rely on him at points this season.
Yeah, yeah. And I do think it's a sort of decent segue, the fact that Richarlison was a very expensive signing. I think we should talk about the end of the transfer window, how satisfied we are with it, because we haven't potted since then. I have to say that I was like very surprised and very worried that we didn't sign another backup centre-back. Because, yeah, one injury to Van de Ven or Romero, and I was like, we're so done. And if they both got injured, when I was in a position where I was like, oh, it's going to be Sanchez and Dier, I was like, I genuinely think that's one of the worst squad holes we've had in so, like, almost as far back as I can remember. I think that's actually comparable to when we had Darren Bent and Fraser Campbell as our striking options in terms of, like, depth. Like, obviously, Van de Ven and Romero are amazing front two, but I mean, like, you essentially just have such bad quality to back them up that it's almost not worth having them. But that's where I am quite impressed with the fact that Ange has taken decisive action and he's trusted the youth. Again, though, if both of them, if Romero was to get suspended and Van de Ven injured, if you're starting two kids at centre-back, it could get very, very, very ugly. That was my biggest worry. And yeah, again, it's something I've said already. I think the fact that we kind of spent the amount you'd expect us to spend without Harry Kane does concern me, because I do think we could have gone big on another player to replace Kane. I know Johnson cost 50 million, but I'm still counting that as like a normal signing, essentially. I think a club of our size and with our money, we should be having transfer windows like that without selling loads and like selling our best player. So how do you guys see the window?
I think we were all pretty much in unison in thinking that if we were to give it a rating, it would be around the 5 out of 10 mark. And that's maybe like a tad negative, like, but 6 is the most I'd give it. Just because we made the Maddison transfer, really, really good transfer, a transfer that should have happened 12 months ago. And we've made it now, and he's been a transformative quality in the team. So that was a great sign-in. We need to replace Lloris, and we haven't mentioned him today, but Vicario, again, pretty brilliant on the weekend, making some fine, fine saves and looking more confident on the ball. And that's just going to grow game by game. So I think that was a great sign. Obviously, Van de Ven, another terrific sign-in. And then aside from that, the players that have performed are players that we've already had. Saar, really good, but we've had him on the books for, what, 2 seasons now? Bissouma, another quality player that we had on the books. And then included in this window, Poro, Kulusevski, we already had them in the team and they were playing. And when you look at it in that sense, Solomon was a free, which was a good pickup, but it was a free. Ashley Phillips was a £2 million signing. And he looks like he's going to be our third centre-back. It's such a mixed bag, because you could say that we've effectively strengthened in positions that we had significant weaknesses in. And I think that centre-back pairing is so, so good. Like, so good. And Udogie is brilliant. What a signing he has been. But one injury to any of those signings, maybe not Maddison, because I think Lo Celso is quality, but even Lo Celso is a very different type of player to Maddison. And I don't think as effective in the output that Maddison has, in just in terms of pure like goals and assists. He won't get as many as Madison in the same starting lineup, I don't think. But yeah, just like Bissouma getting injured would be huge for our team. Romero or Van de Ven getting injured would be very significant for our team. Udogie missing the game or being injured is significant for our team. I think the only like position is like Porro, but we lose a lot of quality on the ball. I just think Emerson's like fine, he's a good backup, but we do still have some significant holes in our squad. And the only reason that I'm not more worried is that it's so like common, like the common sense prevails in this situation, because we know that it's not all going to get solved in a single transfer window, and we've done a lot of good work so far, but we were significantly hampered by just the lack of ideas in how to get rid of our players, and the reluctance to accept bids for players, and holding out for valuations that were never going to be met just because of how poor they've been over the last few seasons. The fact that we got bailed out by United having an injury crisis at left back, which meant Reguilón got off the books, is ridiculous, to say the least. We've managed to ship off two players to the same team on after deadline day, which is, I don't even know how. Still got Lloris on the books, who's probably a third or fourth highest earner at the club. And Dier's still at the club, and he's going to rot on the bench for another year. Sessegnon's still at the club. We have so many players that we weren't able to get rid of in a window where big teams were managing to get fees for average players. And we did not sell a single player outside of Winks and Sanchez.
Yeah.
And that is the issue. That is the significant issue in terms of how I rate this window. Because we've yet again proved that we are completely inefficient at getting rid of players, or knowing when to get rid of players, or understand that the value of the players is not going to be recouped at this point. So we need to be smarter in that decision making, because it's going to hamper us in future if we continue to spend on average 30 million a player and we're getting 9 million back after three poor seasons.
I think a lot of the reason as well, like you said, Eddie, that we are struggling to offload these players is, one, because of obviously our own issues in offloading players, which has been clear for years now. And then two, because these players have basically been playing Harambul for 3 years. They haven't shown that they're able to play in a modern system in a sense. So like offloading those players is really hard. And like you said, it's just from a financial standpoint and just a squad size standpoint as well. Like we just can't, it got towards the end of the window and we obviously wanted to do more business. We just couldn't do it because we still had players there. And one thing for me, which is, was quite telling about the news today or yesterday, whenever it was, when Sanchez and Ndombele left, the fact that like fans are almost at peace with knowing that Phillips might be a third choice centre back and we're not having to rely on Sanchez. And really, all the talk on deadline day was that, oh, we still haven't got a backup for Romero or Van der Ven. But Sanchez was going to be the backup, and he's gone now. But yet, somehow, everyone still feels calmer. And that's probably because the last 4 or 5 years, we've seen what these players do. You guys have said it. I really don't want to shit on Sanchez. I really like the guy. But we weren't going to learn anything new from Sanchez. And the fact that we might be weaker in that position if Phillips is the option. But essentially, like has been mentioned, we've got two kids as our backup options now, but everyone seems happier with that. I think it just shows how important it was to get rid of the Deadwood.
Mm-hmm.
And now, look, there's still, I think, like you said, Eddie, Winks and Sanchez were the only permanent outgoings. And realistically, we needed to get at least 10 to 12 permanently out the door. And all that, look, it's kicking the can down the road, essentially. So I do worry when it comes to next summer, are we going to be in the same situation? Obviously, players might do well out on their loans. Obviously, Rodon, Spence, they might do well, put themselves in the shop window. But I do think you're right, Eddie. It does come down to Levy demanding too big a fee for players that just haven't performed anywhere near the level the past 3-4 years.
I think it's a great point you make about like them playing haram ball, because I was thinking like it's not just us that have struggled to some extent to get rid of players. Like Arsenal, I don't know if Nicola Pepe is actually gone yet, but they're trying to get him to Besiktas and he's not going because he's sat on 140k a week, I think. And they literally can't sell him for love nor money. Like they've accepted a £2 million bid for him. They paid £72 million for him. And he's like impossible for them to shift. The problem is we essentially have like 10 versions of Nicola Pepe, because we've had players that have failed on big money transfers. And not only that, they're not in the shop window because they've not been playing. And when they have been playing, they've been terrible. So I do think we are in a kind of like uniquely bad position when it comes to selling players. And I don't know how it resolves itself, to be honest, because like you say, Jed, like they might do well out on their loans, but it's that's very scattergun. I mean, it's like we were saying earlier about like Ansu Fati. Do you really want to like put all your trust in some guy who's on a dry loan when you could potentially play other players? Like it's very volatile being a loan player. So yeah, hopefully we don't, but it does seem like we might have to kick the can down the road. But yeah, I think that's a great point. I think that's all from Levy's appointments of Conte and Mourinho. It is still having after effects now, because that's why we can't sell players, essentially.
Yeah, I think it's also going to be a lot of, from now and over the next 2-3 years, I think it's just going to be a lot of just letting players leave on free. So obviously we got Rick Sanchez, who I think was due to leave on a free at the end of this season anyway. Dyer, obviously there's no chance he's going to stay beyond this season. I just think there's going to be a lot of players in that boat now. I even said it in January this year, that there's no chance Ndombele is going anywhere on a permanent deal. There's no chance. The wages are too high. Levy is not going to let him go for peanuts because he's our record signing. Levy's not going to sanction that sort of deal. So I think there's going to be so many players in that boat. Reguilón's probably going to be another one. Højbjerg has 2 years left on his deal. So really, we needed to get rid of him this summer, because it's going to be hard. Again, Levy's going to want to demand a big fee for him. But with a player left with a year left on his contract, these European clubs are going to want to pay that sort of money? I don't think so. But again, with Højbjerg, we kind of need him, because there's no natural backup to Bissouma at the moment. And that's sort of one where it would have been, it kind of would have been a bonus in a sense to get a backup for Bissouma. But it wasn't the end of the world, where I think a third centre-back would have really been needed. But yeah, in terms of outgoings, I think it's just going to be, I don't know how long Rodon's contract is, but he might end up just going on a free. Lloris would obviously go on a free at the end of the season. Forster will probably go on a free at the end of the season. There's going to be a lot of players. Sessegnon, who knows what happens with Sessegnon? Don't think we'll get money for him because of his injury issues. So there's going to be a lot of players just walking out on frees. And I think, yeah, we might just have to accept that, to be honest.
Yeah. And at the same time, we did try for like Kelly on deadline day, and I didn't think that was the answer either.
No.
Just the fee that we were being quoted for having bid for that player and then it being rejected and then going back for another bid and then being told that the deal was complicated. It's like, thank God, because that's not the answer either. Like scrambling on deadline day for a relegation, well, not relegation because I think Bournemouth would do well, but for the level of centre-back you're getting for that money, we spent an extra 10 million and got Van de Ven. Like that's like the type of money that we were going to spend on Kelly, who was abysmal against us. And I just don't understand where, if that's the case, if that was the situation, if we, like, the thing is, we were going in for Kelly with Sanchez still on the books. So there was clearly an attempt to have a backup centre back, which means that we shouldn't have left it to a deadline day. And maybe it's because we were able to get clarity in the Sanchez situation. Maybe because we knew that Sanchez deal was going to go through. That's why we went for Kelly on deadline day. But all of this could have been done a lot sooner, because we did have bids for Sanchez earlier on in the window, and they weren't accepted. And obviously, like, Sanchez didn't want to go to Russia, which is, I think, fine. I think that as a player, you should be able to have the freedom to turn down moves that would be detrimental to you. But at the same time, like, holding out for these fees, not getting them, and having to play hardball with another team, and they'd be like, well, no, like, you had all the time in the world to make these bids and we could have found a replacement. Like, this is the exact same, Højbjerg, for instance, Højbjerg not going to Fulham means that Pellini doesn't go to Bayern Munich, and that whole deal collapses because nothing was done in time. And it's the assumption that we're able to do everything at the last minute and it's going to work out. Well, it hasn't. And now we're going to get rid of Sanchez, which is fine. But we're having to accept the fact that someone that we brought in from Blackburn, who's 18 years old, we brought him in not on a whim, but as an opportunity because of the financial situation of Blackburn, is going to be our third choice centre back when the teams that we're competing against, City, have five world class centre backs. Chelsea have centre backs falling out of their ears. Arsenal have four centre backs that could walk in to most teams in the Premier League. United are possibly the only team with as bad backups as we have. And Liverpool have at least three centre backs that are quality. If that's the opposition, and we're going into a season where essentially we have an untested youth player backing up Romero and Van de Ven, it is worrying. And that is going to be because, like, the balance of that is because we can't get rid of players, and we've also been terrible at pre-planning and getting the players that we need. Because earlier on in the window, we're like, yeah, we're going to go for both Tapsoba and Van de Ven. Then it turned out it was just Van de Ven. And then we're like, yeah, but we admire Schürrle. And so we could go for him in the window. We don't go for Schürrle, but it's an indication that we do want to get a centre back. ITK is saying that we want a third centre back. We don't get a third centre back. We get rid of Sanchez. Get rid of Sanchez after the deadline day. And all of that amounts to a bit of a chaotic window for us. But because we're in transition, we are going to be a bit more lenient. And I think that's kind of the compromise we're having at this time.
Yeah. I think that pretty much sums up everything that we wanted to say on the matter. So I think I'm going to leave it here, guys. But yeah, Eddie, thanks for joining me.
No worries, man. I can go back to sleep now.
And Jed, thanks for joining me as well.
Thank you.
Take care, guys, and thanks for listening.